Hi, good morning, everyone. Thank you for joining us today for the NEMA Demand Management Working Group meeting. My name is Stephanie Hori with the Consensus Building Institute, facilitating today. And so before we get started, we'll do our regular round robin of introductions. So start with Justin.
Justin Jensen, Deputy Director of Public Works Water Resources. Hal Crane, Groundwater Commission.
Brendan Flynn, Grower, Tim Kaney.
Adam Engelhart, Groundwater Commission, Grower.
Chief Grimwald, Grower.
Ian Turnbull, Bay Area.
Todd Amer, Commission.
Michael Ward, Commission.
Liz Mary, Commission.
Bill Ward, Grower.
Thanks, Bill. And Joe online.
Yep, thank you. Joe Hughes, attorney down here in Bakersfield with the Klein Dantelli Goldner Law Firm, working as a consultant for the group.
Amazing, Joe. All right, as usual, do our participation procedures. The top ones I'll just keep on saying is that this group doesn't have to reach consensus, but the more that we want to hear from every single folks, their different perspectives, the more that we're able to understand and articulate fine avenues, areas of potential agreement. But the big thing is understanding what are the different perspectives and why and that rationale. And that really helps us try to keep progress forward. Then the other ones more just logistics, particularly with Joe participating in these meetings virtually. Really, really need to make sure that we don't have any side conversations, but having just one person speaking at a time will really, really help for the virtual folks follow the conversation. All right. Recap from last week. It was a long meeting and a productive meeting, but it was focused primarily on introducing Joe as our legal and helping redraft the new revised proposal for the demand management program. So introducing Joe and having a conversation about the feedback on what we liked and what we would like to see changed from either the original straw proposal and the alternative proposal. So that was very much the what we discussed last time. And since then, Joe was able to, out on vacation and sick, was still able to send us over a revision of the alternative proposal. So we sent that to you folks that had the red line edits in there, as well as a clean Word document. So that is going to be kind of our two primary documents that we'll use today. And any other kind of general updates to share with this group?
Yeah, I don't think so at the moment.
Well, why don't you, just for everyone, you do have this ordinance out there for fees. I think it's relevant because, this does have a fee discussion. And
we're going to talk more about fees here in a minute, too.
Yeah. So good for
us, but yeah.
We'll flag that and loop back to that. Thanks. Thanks, Michael. So along those lines, the agenda, two major items. One, I'm going to really hand it over to Joe to walk us through the revised proposal and explain his rationale for some of the language and the edits and some of the things that he flagged as items for the group to discuss. So let Joe be able to do that, give him that plenty of time. And then again, we have the April 23rd was kind of the extension date from the board to give us an update on the new, on an updated proposal. And so kind of using that as an anchoring milestone, I think it's really important for us to be able to have a game plan for what we want to present to the board to demonstrate we've made significant progress. So we want to make sure that we are kind of pulling all those ideas together, be able to share with the commission and the board that we have a deliberative and strategic path forward. And also on the sidelines, we've been pulling all of that in together to actually document what that would look like. So any kind of questions on the two main goals for today? Okay. So the revised alternative proposal, I'm going to turn it over to Joe after this. And after Joe kind of explains this, wanted to Last time we did kind of like a round robin, which I think was really, really helpful in making sure we heard from everyone. And so it's been really helpful in getting Joe on board with the group. So we're going to do something kind of similar again. We might be a little bit more organic about it. But in particular, what we had asked you prior to the meeting was to be thinking through, you know, kind of like what were your maybe top two or three feedback questions, those things related to the alternative proposal. And ultimately, we're trying to get a sense for what of the elements seems to be going in the right direction, what are significant things that you still have concerns about. Kind of related to that, are there components that you think are kind of good enough to get into the revised proposal that ultimately gets presented to the board? So having those kind of just general questions in mind will help kind of guide our discussion, but I'm going to turn it over to Joe.
All right. Thank you, Stephanie. Let's see. Before I walk through, and I wasn't intending to go line by line through my red line version. I was thinking, Stephanie hit on this, walking through and giving you what was in my mind as I was doing some of the drafting. Before I get to that, I want to just touch base briefly on the process that I went through. I started with the member comments on alternative proposal. It's dated March 17, 2026, that was distributed at the last meeting. When I first started on this, I didn't have the round table, the round robin comments. I think they're pretty much articulated in the working group's member comments on alternative proposal that I identified this March 17 draft. Anyway, I used that as the starting point. And then as you see in the margin comments, really to kind of get my brain going and to kind of create some signposts, if you will, along the way, I literally just did a copy and paste into the document, into the framework as margin comments, these comments. And again, and in doing that, I really want to stress, I wasn't saying anybody was right or anybody was wrong. I really just had, okay, these are the comments. Let me see what I can kind of craft to address them, or at least put something out there for people to react to, for folks to react to. So I literally did just do a copy and paste. And then you see in the margin comments, I even, you know, lettered them, you know, so you could see, okay, this was this margin comment from the table that I guess that Stephanie, you prepared. So I know I'm belaboring it a little bit, but I really did want you to know that I wasn't saying again that this was a good comment, a bad comment, a fair comment, an unfair comment. It was just, all right, these are the comments that I have, and I'm going to put them as signposts, if you will, in the document. And then I'm going to go through and try to address them. And some were relatively simple and some were, okay, I know this is going to be debated, but that's fine. Let me come up with some language, and maybe my language is horrible and makes everybody upset. But at least it's some language for folks to react to and moves it from comment to actual, language. And then it can either be wordsmithed or struck out or what have you. So really what I'm trying to say is that I took those comments, I drafted, and I'm not saying that this has to be the final answer. It's just something to move the ball forward and folks to react to. So hopefully that's clear. And it's not me saying, hey, this is the way, this has to be the gospel. So that's what I did. And then as Stephanie said, then I created the clean version, accepting all of the redlining. And again, not saying that my redlining is the end all be all, you know, my edits, but then creating the clean version so folks could mark that up. Again, sometimes you say, well, that's a nice ad, Joe, but I'm going to strike it back out again, because I don't think it belongs there, which is fine. Just trying to move the ball forward. So in any event, that's the process that I went through. And then the finished product was what you have there. And I sent the PDF with the redlining and then obviously the clean version in Word, so you could, you know, have some fun with it if you wanted to. With that being said, then let me stop there and ask if there are any questions or comments on the process. And then I was going to walk through the PDF or the red line document and hit the high points there. So let me come up for air for a moment and ask if there are any questions or comments about just the process that I generally followed. Okay. All right. So then looking at the red line document,
Oh, Joe, do you want us to have the want to share a screen yourself, or do you want us to have the PDF?
Really, really good question. Why don't you let me drive? So let me just send you a request to let me share screen, and I'll. Okay, I can now. All
All
right.
right, it's easy.
All right, we're in business. Okay, on the sub-basins issue and the addition of Corning, you know, again, you see how I address that. Not sure if that's controversial or not coming in, you know, where I am in this process. But again, it was relatively easy enough to address. And as you'll see over here in the margin comment, that was comment A on the comment table. Moving down into the section 1.1, this language is to really set the stage for what this is and perhaps what it's not intended to be. It's not intended to be the final, what I would call the final answer. You know, this is the demand management program. You know, this language here that the program is intended to provide a framework for the sub-basins, providing flexibility for refinement, coordination, expansion, blah, blah, blah. And so really setting the stage for this is the framework and it's a planning document as opposed to, no, this is exactly what we're going to do, which I know was the subject of some conversation last time. And I could kind of see it in the comments as well. So don't need to do the deep dive on it now, but this was a perfect example of me saying, okay, I hear some of the comments some folks want, I think, you know, the detailed plan. And then some folks say, well, no, let's have a planning document with some meat on the bone. And so this is my attempt to say, all right, we're going to put some meat on the bone. We're going to try to provide some, you know, guardrails at the same time. This is not intended to be the final answer for the program. This is the process to get us there with the guardrails and some timeline, the timeline, but pretty well thought out as to where we want to go with it. And then more of the same in this section 1.2, that is intended to provide a sufficiently clear framework for future implementation while preserving flexibility, etc. The next point here, and again, I think this, I'm not sure how controversial it would be or debated you want to have, it should be. Again, coming up with some language to say that the voluntary measures may proceed concurrently. Not, you know, you can start off with the voluntary procedures and then, yeah, we'll get around to what I think of as stakeholder engagement. Here's the communication and engagement plan. In my mind, it's, you know, I just refer to it as one and the same thing. So I was specific that it's concurrent. So, okay, we'll start off with a stakeholder engagement. We can also start with voluntary measures because they're just that, they're voluntary. But we're not going to say we're going to start with the voluntary measures and then someday we'll get to stakeholder engagement. And then the phase two comes after the stakeholder engagement. So it's sort of a three-step process. In my mind, what I was trying to get to here was it's really a two-step process, voluntary measures and stakeholder engagement getting going, and then you won't do the phase two mandatory stuff until stakeholder engagement is complete. And my thinking there, for what it's worth, is phase one is voluntary. So you're not, it's not mandatory. And so perhaps that's more better, if you will, to start with those without, you know, completing your stakeholder engagement process, because it truly is voluntary, and making clear there's a difference between voluntary measures and mandatory measures. And then again, more of the same here, that concurrent with the initiation of phase one, prior to adoption of the regulatory measures, you'll work on the communication and engagement plan. Uh, And then again, more of the same here about for the phase one voluntary measures, district may initiate and implement such measures while the outreach milestones are being completed. So again, it's a little repetitive, but just again, doing my best to address the concern that things get going, at least with some measures, before the stakeholder engagement process is fully completed.
No, I had a question.
Yep.
This is Steve Grunwald. So in section 2.2, under the CNE number 5, documentation and feedback, including preparation of a summary response to comments prior to board adoption of phase one. How extensive are we talking about in terms of a response to comments, engagement summary? That can be an ongoing document, I guess, but I wouldn't want it to get in the way of adopting phase one
Yeah.
measures. And so does that preclude that, or is that simultaneous, or what?
Good point. Good catch. It's probably a little bit of a glitch there, where because the way that I've written this, at least written it up, that it's concurrent, that you could start with the phase one. So this probably should be wordsmithed a bit so that it's stressing that it is the you got two questions in there. I'm taking the second one first, I think, which is emphasizing that it still is concurrent. You don't have to have the response to comments completed before phase one measures, that it really can be parallel pathed, so to speak. So that needs to be clarified. Good catch. The response to comments, good question too. Certainly people kind of you see it in a CEQA document. You have to have response to comments. We've seen them in the groundwater sustainability plans, responding to comments during stakeholder engagement. I don't know that there's certainly nothing codified in Sigma or otherwise that, hey, this is what this has to look like. If you want, we could add some language here, to put it, I've got it, we've got it in quotes here, but we could, put something in there about, generally responding to comments received, something like that, words like generally as opposed to, detailed responses. I'm not sure that's what folks have in mind.
Okay, thank you. Thanks.
Do you want comments as you talk, Joe, or wait till you're done?
I think it would be helpful if we do it as we go, as long as we don't, and not you, I'll do what you need to do. I think as long as we don't go down too many rabbit holes, it might be helpful to kind of hear some immediate feedback as I go through them. Because otherwise, I'm going to go through this thinking that I'm brilliant, and then you're going to crush that at the end and tell me I'm an idiot.
Well, I don't want to. I've had lots of comments. On the first couple pages, actually, I like the way it goes. And I like all the work you've done here. If I want to back up a little bit, we talk about phase one, immediate implementation measures. And I'm wondering, if we talk about a start date. For that, and I'm wondering if we can get some clarity on what that is. Not for you, but at least internally, what's the start date for phase one? So if
Do you
we
mind if
can,
I, you mind if I, it might just be helpful
go
if I
ahead.
say something about that?
Yeah.
Technically, we are doing those things right now, right? That's part of some of the grant-funded work that we are currently doing, is trialing some of these, what we call phase one implementation measures, and ultimately, seeing what we get action for, seeing what there's still the demand to get, which we do clearly have some. And so it will help us move forward with those voluntary measures. So technically, all right.
No, I get that totally. For this purpose, though, I was wondering if we needed to have a date or know that it is ongoing currently, or if is there a resolution involved here? And then maybe it's the date of the reso.
Yeah, I don't know that a resolution would be required to continue down this road that we're already going. Once we fund them and put those programs in place, each individual one will have a board action associated with them, right? Say, hey, we tested this methodology. Here was the outcome. Here's the continued demand. We want to continue to do this. Here's our budgetary setup for it. Get approval on the board level.
I think for de facto purposes, when the first bill goes out to landowners, that's when this really starts. I mean, you talk about the beginning.
There'll be immediate desire rise.
Yeah. Maybe phase one really starts when that bill shows up in the mailbox, in my opinion.
The phrase in here somewhere, as soon as practicable as well, yep. And that's kind of a catch-all for all yep. of this. As you mentioned, Justin, there's a lot of this that's already, as a matter of fact, just how guys farm. You know, we don't waste water needlessly. We're already in conservation efforts. So yeah, it's redundant to say we're going to start those when we're already doing them.
When we're already doing them, exactly. And then the district's job is to help improve that scenario, right? To do things that make that better. So whether it's funding things, right, working towards funding or assistance with funding to make changeovers, whether it's actually literally technical assistance, right, those things are what we're talking about.
So that would be stuff like what Kevin was talking about, the RCD yep. stuff where they've gone into those four
yep. places. And like the connection processes where you're switching someone from use of groundwater over to the use of surface water right. when that's available. Those are like the big programs that we've been looking at so far and seem to have some success. And we'll be talking about that too as we move forward.
Joe, real quick, I'd like to comment on the comment disposition. I think that's valuable to have it in a spreadsheet, line by line. It's not that much extra work, and it provides a discipline and a record of, you know, did you address it? If so, how? And if not addressed. So I think that I'd like to see that formal.
Joe, under section 1.3, the test require a two-phase structure. I'm looking at the bullet for phase two. And, you know, we say under phase two that this will includes allocations, well restrictions, pumping restrictions, water markets, trading, and our fee structures. I would like to use the word could instead of, you know, in essence,
yeah,
giving you some, you know, leeway there. And the only reason I say that is I'm not committed yet to water markets. And I'm hoping we can, you know, spend some agendized time, not today, but make this our topic. We need to talk about credits and markets and really understand the issues associated with that. If we're going to include that, I think, in this proposal.
So you're suggesting these may include?
At this point.
Yeah, I'd drop a may in there. Exactly.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, it's just.
Sure.
I'm afraid of the commitment potential there.
Yes. Yeah. And that was not the intent. So another good catch as we're going through this. Stephanie, are you or is the Zoom taking notes on this stuff?
It's recording so we can pick up the specifics and just. Perfect. Can compare to make sure that we're catching.
Okay. That'd be a lot easier. That's great. A lot easier on my end as opposed to trying to scribble all this stuff down and think at the same time. So yeah, really good point. And it's funny, as soon as you started reading that, I was thinking, I caught up pretty fast and thought, yeah, that's pretty, it's conclusory saying that it's going to include those things when it's really, you know, getting back to the flexibility concept, it should say these may include.
You know, under your section 2.1 legal and policy basis, this goes with what Ian, I think, is saying on, you know, how the public input is incorporated into the decisions. I think this is really important, and I like this piece a lot. And I don't know, it's probably too much to ask for some kind of guidance along that way. I think that's what that might look like, but I think it's an important piece for this.
Basically. Past spreadsheet that has what you did.
This is, and we do that in that way. We keep those spreadsheets. You've seen those created by Stephanie for many of these things, where we have a spreadsheet that says, "Here's the comments we got. You know, here's supposed to be what the outcomes, whether we could or could not respond to them, et cetera, et cetera." We do this as a whole already, right? For every single item in community outreach that we do. You guys have seen a ton of these documents already. These here's who we reach out to, right? This is generally our interested parties that we keep to interact with these things, who we heard from, what those things were, and then what those responses were, and that sort of spreadsheet.
I think making that spreadsheet public or is a really good idea.
Yes. Under section 2.2, program communication and engagement plan, I'm looking at the second bullet there, and I just, you know, I don't think we need to go to this level. And then we're talking about basin-specific plans for each of the sub-basins. And I look at, I mean, having a countywide communication plan or communication outreach plan, I think works for us. I can see where these basins are small. There's demographics really, in my mind, don't warrant a basin-specific plan. But I think we can identify all the stakeholders within these sub-basins. And I think that'll go a long way.
Quickly speak to that. The Tehama County's communication engagement plan is along exactly those lines. It's one document to Tehama County-wide, but it has subsections that point out to the nuances that might be specific to particular basins.
Okay.
So maybe basin specific is maybe too strong, because it sounds, Stephanie, from what you just said, is that there's general, but then addressing particular nuances as appropriate.
Right.
Right. So when we say basin specific, that I see where you're coming from, that may imply that each one is going to have its own, you know, when that's not really, it sounds like what the case would be. So maybe it's, you know, a plan addressing particular, I don't want to say nuances, but addressing particular nuances for each sub-basin.
Yeah.
All right. I'm hearing some themes on that. There's a couple of ideas around the language for allowing the flexibility for engagement to proceed forward at the same time as phase one. At the same time, though, so we've been kind of giving some ideas of how can we include some specificity and a documented record for outreach engagements. I do want, unless there's any key items, I think language edits, that definitely send those to me at the meeting and I can compile those for Joe. But I might want to suggest pressing on. Okay, folks. All right, Joe, where did we evolve around?
I think I got down, I was about down to, and again, this comment, again, we've already hit it about, you know, the process here about phase one being able to proceed before completion of the C&E plan. Voluntary measures 3.1, again, more of the same. They're just saying that they can proceed concurrently. All right, so implementation protocol. So there's something here in particular that I wanted to spend a little bit of time talking about, because I know it came up at the last meeting, and that's the use of the polygon-based groupings and how that works. And then you'll see throughout, you know, I added language here, supported by the administrative record. Again, that's a shout out, if you will, to making sure and giving comfort to folks that, like, hey, we're not going to make this stuff up as we go. And every day is going to be a new day, that there's actually, you know, whatever happens needs to be supported by the administrative record, which is a nice way of saying you need to have a basis for doing what you're proposing to do. With the polygon based groupings, this is my opinion, you know, those are good for monitoring, but those are artificial boundaries. You know, same thing, you know, down here, this part of the Central Valley with the various sub-basins, you know, those sub-basin boundaries, you know, we had to educate folks early on. Those are political boundaries. You know, the water doesn't stop at the end of the current sub-basin, right? It doesn't, you know, it's going to do what it's going to do underground. So those are artificial boundaries and, you know, really political boundaries. And so the way that I've always viewed, you know, the polygons are, it's good, you know, to have a smaller area for monitoring purposes. When you get into the actual regulation part of it, you need to have some hydrogeological basis for why is this the management area? And it may cut along the lines of, a group of polygons. That may very well be. But that would be more of a coincidence as opposed to the polygon driving the show. It's really what's going on below ground, and is that a good management area to define? Out in, I think I mentioned it last time, out in the Cuyama Basin Groundwater Sustainability Agency, we have a central management area because it was the hardest hit historically. And that is where the groundwater levels have dropped the most significant. And so the idea was to create that management area and address that first. But again, that was driven by the hydrogeology and what was happening there. So again, where you've got, whether it's the sub-basin wide management area polygon, I kind of see it. You kind of start narrowing the scope of, whatever spatial implementation, so to speak, that you want to use. The polygons, like I keep saying, my mind is good for monitoring purposes because you may have a monitoring well in specific areas. When you get down to the actual regulation under SGMA, I think that's where you need to have, the management zone, which may be, a group of those polygons or may cut across polygons. But anyway, that's what I wanted to go down that rabbit hole, a little bit to let you know, because that question had come up before, how I view those polygons.
Can I ask you a question real quick, Joe?
Sure.
Just sorry to interrupt, but can you tell me in Cuyama what they ultimately ended up using as the dividing hydrological condition? Like, did they say, hey, we have a specific, say, rate of movement of water in this area, so its natural recharge rate is higher? Is it because there was a soil type delineation? Do you remember what that was?
I should, Justin. I should. Yeah, I should, and I can get you that a very specific answer on that. It was a while ago. And so, but it really, it was all of the above, basically, right? It was really all of the above where they were seeing it. And there's debate about that. And some of the folks who were in that central management area cried foul and are even getting louder about that they think that the basin operates like a bathtub. Just like a bathtub, which it doesn't. But those in the central management area want to take that view because they want other areas regulated in the same fashion. I can get that to you. I just can't recall off the top of my head. It was basically all of the above.
I can look it up. I just wanted to know if you remembered.
I think that would be very helpful. I know how they approached it.
Yeah.
Joe, one more wordsmithing item, and I don't want to water down the document by changing wills to mays, but in section 5.1, phase two measures will consist of these tools, and we're still, I think there's some discussion needed with respect to the water market trading and the demand management fee structures, which aren't really in our purview here in this group. So can we change will consist of to may consist of mandatory tools such as, and then the list that you have.
What's the section?
And I don't want
5.1.
how much of this. It is actually saying will consist of mandatory tools, but it's not saying that any of those specific tools are required.
It does do such as, so
Yeah.
there's a
It's saying
room
it's
there.
doing the same thing in a different way. Just from my input.
Okay, I read it.
Yeah, that's how I read it. That's how it looks to me.
Okay.
I think you're safe in that one.
Such as.
I will agree with many of the others, but I think you're safe in that one.
The will is tools.
Yeah.
Such as, and that could be whatever list you want it to be.
And there, that list can
It's
be bigger, smaller,
for
that one. Those
example.
are examples.
Okay, gotcha. I'm with you.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. I appreciate what you're saying, but you're saying that it will consist of mandatory tools. And then you say such as, but you're also including that list. This is a mandatory tool.
It is saying describing those as mandatory tools, but it is not saying that those are the mandatory tools you will use. It's giving an example of mandatory tools.
And I think what I would do to wordsmith that, I think I would say phase two measures will include mandatory tools, period. Those tools may include, because
Good.
I see what you're both saying. You're absolutely, I think you're both right that you want to say that there will be mandatory tools, period. But then these are examples of what those mandatory tools might be.
May or shall are the two operative words there.
Okay. Passing us forward, I'm seeing a lot of blue lines being lots of blue edits, so encourage us to move forward. But definitely that, may include shall include that type of flexibility where it makes sense, while still ensuring there's the teeth and the commitment to the mandatory actions.
And I think, it's kind of a moot point, or can be a moot point, if we have that discussion about, for me personally, about water trading and credits, and we come to some consensus on what we want for the county. And I think, but I think until we do that, I need this wiggle worm,
right?
Wiggle room.
I think this group and others have said that they're willing to commit to considering it, but it's committing to considering it.
Which the when we say that, those may include, there is a commitment in there to Stephanie's point, which I think is a good thing. I'm willing to, it may include these, because, I'm not trying to put, ideas in anybody's mind, but if it was something with DOA, you wouldn't even put it on the list. You wouldn't even acknowledge today that it's even on the list, or you'd go to the, you'd go one step further and say, this will not include, X, Y, and Z. So I think if we say that there will be mandatory tools, period, and then that, those may include, then okay, it's on the table for discussion.
Thanks, Joe.
Before I move on, 5.2, the other, one of the other, just emphasizing that determination of sustainable yield for any relevant area using board-approved methodology supported by the administrative record. So, again, these are things that, the board will develop over time, and again, supported by the administrative record, as I was explaining before.
So I have a question. I see that phrase often in your comments and additions, administrative record or substantial evidence in the administrative record. What does that mean in your legal sense? How does that, does it hem us in?
No, it doesn't. Good. Yeah. So the administrative record, that is, it's a thing. It's a thing, but it's an important thing. And where it fits in is if you file a lawsuit to challenge an administrative agency's decision, you need to show that they were being arbitrary and capricious. They just made this stuff up. And when you go to court in a piece of civil litigation, you try your case and everybody puts on their evidence. We've all seen that. You put somebody on the witness stand, you enter documents. That's the record. That's the record of that trial. When you're challenging an administrative proceeding, you don't do any of that. The court is really looking at the administrative agency saying, were you being arbitrary and capricious? Because of this thing that we called separation of powers, the judicial branch can't just override in most instances what an administrative agency has decided. They've got to look at it and say, well, if you're being arbitrary and capricious, yeah, I can send you back and say, do it again. Court can't just step in and say, yeah, I would have done it differently. Therefore, this is how you have to do it. What the court has to look at then is the administrative record. So when you petition a court to review what an administrative agency has done, you submit to the court the administrative record. That is the same as what you normally see on TV, where you have witnesses and documents. You're creating the record in the trial. For a review of an administrative agency's decision, you don't do any of that. You don't put witnesses on, you don't submit documents, you don't have a trial per se. You submit the administrative record because, and this gets back to where I started, the court's job is to look at what the administrative agency saw and then did, and then say, was that arbitrary and capricious based on what was presented to the administrative agency? And so that's why, that's what the administrative record is. And that's why it's so important if somebody is going to challenge the administrative agency's decision, because that's everything. Because the court, can only look at the administrative record and say, based on that, were you being arbitrary and capricious? And so what you'll see us lawyers do when we are in the throes of battle with an administrative agency, we're all trying to put as much stuff before the board as possible, because we know if it doesn't get into the administrative record, we're not going to be able to argue to a court that it even existed, because the administrative record, that's the record. What I'm saying here then is that whatever they're going to be doing, we're making very clear that it has to be supported by the administrative record. Now, if you understood my dissertation there about what the administrative record is, it kind of has to be supported by the administrative record. This is just my kind of shout out to remind everybody that whatever they're doing, it's got to be supported by the record, because if it's not, a court would likely find it to be arbitrary and capricious because there was no basis for it and send it back. So hopefully that makes sense.
Thank you. It does clear it up. Thank you.
Joe, can you give me a dissertation on what you mean by commensurate with issue standard? I think we all know what that implies, but you identify it as a standard in the text here, and you want some clarity, I guess.
Yeah, was that? I know what you're talking about. Where was
it? We can see it on section 5.3, but it comes up in different parts.
You're right, it does. Yeah, it does. Commensurate with issues standard.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah.
I mean, to give you vertigo here.
And maybe just, I don't know. A definition might be important to have on that, but it ties into this administrative record too conversation, I think.
So this is what this is. So the commensurate with, and this could be written probably a little bit better to make it, to really define it, because it's only in the heading here. But the resolutions require that phased adaptive measures be implemented commensurate with the amount of demand reduction required and the specific issues facing the relevant areas, considering regional special zones, blah, 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 blah. So that I could probably tie it down a little bit better, but this is the commensurate with issues.
Okay.
So good point. Because as soon as somebody raises the question like, hey, what does this mean? That's, you know, for the lawyer, that's usually a flag for, you know, hey, we need to clarify that. Because if you don't understand it now, 2 years, 5, 20 years from now, people are really not going to understand it. But we can nail it down. But that's where it comes from.
You know, and as far as that, I mean, I guess it was just a little too vague for me. I'm not sure what I'm asking for, but when you say the amount of demand reduction required, I mean, that's conditional, you know, in my mind. And it really depends on the ultimate goal. And so I could say that would be a debatable standard. Well,
got it. Okay. It's funny, as I was working on this, beginning of last week, I commensurate with issues standard. I went back and like, where is that? And then, oh yeah, it's open 1.4. And I'm like, oh, okay. There is a toehold there. But okay. Yeah. Point taken.
What are you asking for then on that? Like better definition or clarification of what it means, or what, I mean, I kind of understand in my mind what it means. And so kind of depending on how the conditions are is how we're going to respond. It adds flexibility and it adds responsiveness to the, you know, if we're applying these measures and groundwater levels continue to fall, then we have to do something commensurate with that issue. And so I think it's good the way it is, but you know, I don't know, what's the group think? We okay with it?
And by the way, just for a little piece of this, any piece of data that gets interpreted to an outcome is debatable. That interpretation is always a process and it's always debatable, no matter what it is. So ultimately, that's sort of built into the way these things work, that any interpretation of data has a debatable outcome.
Okay.
flip side of there, yes.
So that's like that, Michael, if you do feel like we're on conversation. All right. I'll flag that, Michael. If you feel like that, there needs to be some think about it. We're not pressuring, just like flagging. I think that folks feel like they understand the intent and it's good so far. But if you have ideas, send it to us and they'll share it with
you. I do have one more general policy question here. And if Joe, can you tell me what you think the difference is between safe yield and sustainable yield, because I think you've deleted some safe yield references here, and you've substituted that with sustainable yield. And I like that.
Can I put a pin on that just because it is one of like section 5.5, so it's coming up.
We'll get down there.
Okay. Yeah, but brace yourself for impact when we get there. Okay.
Well, they're doing all of that view of new tech. Okay. So I just want to give Joe an opportunity to explain some of the thinking behind this.
Yes, thank you. Yeah, thank you. Like, seriously, it's that's a safe yield, sustainable yield. That's a thing. So, yeah. So this language here, again, talking about the spatial boundaries and, again, what are used for monitoring, allocation, fees, restrictions shall establish, and the board shall establish that. This is more of the same that I was briefly identifying before, explaining my thinking before, that, some of these tools, we'll call them, are good for some purposes, but not all purposes. And so just trying to, it's all out there. I've got my personal feelings about what's, like the polygons are good for some things, but perhaps not for actual management and regulation of the groundwater. Let's see. Oh, there was something else here, the trigger. This in particular, that the program may use trigger criteria that are informed by, but not necessarily identical to, existing GSP MOs and MTs, provided the basis is clearly explained in the administrative record. Once again, in general, earlier warning criteria may inform voluntary or incentive-based responses, while more serious threshold conditions may inform consideration of mandatory measures. So this was something else that I was throwing out there for consideration, that, certainly folks get concerned about, and I've heard this in other basins and sub-basins, that, hey, do we have to wait for the four-alarm fire before we actually start doing something? And there can be a lot of debate about that. And so what I was trying to get at here is that there can be some trigger criteria, some early warning that may inform, again, the voluntary stuff, quote unquote, as opposed to the mandatory, but the mandatory, not so much for the mandatory. So again, I almost glossed right over that. That was something else that I kind of struggled with a little bit and came up with this language for consideration.
Joe, before you continue, I think Brendan.
As you were scrolling, I just wanted to make a comment. If you're done with 5.3, I was commenting on 5.4.
Sure.
I have a question about 5.3 just before we go. I want to make sure we're on the same page here. The real intent in saying this is that we can set up conditions under which phase two, more restrictive, mandatory measures could potentially be implemented before another time frame because it's a response to a specific condition. Is that what we're talking about? Hey, we realized we have a problem here that is not just related to time, and we're going to have to dive in and fix this now so we could technically pass something that's mandatory now as opposed to waiting to some future date that we set. Is that the intent of this?
Yeah, sort of. To really nitpick the language here, in general, earlier warning criteria may inform the voluntary or incentive-based responses, while more serious threshold conditions may inform consideration of the mandatory measures. So I guess what I was trying to get at here is, if you see something that, it's going in the wrong direction, that could inform and direct a voluntary, like, hey, let's do this because it's voluntary. But if you're going to take, if it's going to be mandatory, it needs to be more grounded in the MOs and the MTs and the GSP is what I'm trying to get at here.
What about trend, for example, trend MT over, say, a four-year period where you haven't hit the MT yet, but the trend is clear over the last 4 or 5 years or whatever, and if you extrapolate beyond in time, you're going to hit the MT. Can that be, with this language, can that be used to institute phase two measures?
Yeah, and the way it's written here, the way I've got it written here is it informs consideration of those measures. So it's not going to trigger it, but it's going to cause the board to go, okay, wait, we see the trend using your example, which I think is a great one. We see the trend here. We don't, you know, kind of see where it's going and we kind of know what we're doing. So we see where we're going to be most likely. And so that triggers the consideration of the mandatory measures as opposed to their immediate implementation.
You could add and implementation of after consideration to give at least some direction other than we're going to think about it or right. We're going to think about it maybe and do something about it. That's a word.
This is exactly the reason why I asked, because I think that there's some sort of desire to have like a tooth thing that says, hey, conditions get so bad, right?
Yeah.
You know what? I mean, you're right, it could rain for 10 years. You're right, it could not rain for 10 years, right? And those are two huge variances of possibilities. But if this one does happen, hey, we're going to have to be able to do something about it, right? And that's, I think that will allay a lot of people's fears if we have something, if we talk about that in that way. Hey, we need to be able to do something about it if we ultimately get to these bad places.
I don't know, Stephen, if you have time, for this conversation and continue, but I do at some point either now or in the near future talk about your original straw proposal and what was mandatory there, which basically said that if I had an undesirable result, and I need you help me here,
yep,
we're gonna, and that undesirable result in this instance was one or two.
Well, there's some very
specific antique. Now we're in the safe field, or sustainable yield level of extraction, right?
Yeah.
But we were also talking about ramping up to that safe field or ramping down to that safe field over a period of time. I don't know, if we're going to have gone down to this ramping down kind of approach, which make this really incremental.
And that's great for the long-term plan.
As we reduce our extraction, I'm not sure that having a trigger point early on even matters, So are you going to start this slow ramp, because you've hit a trigger point? I think at some point we really need to look at that straw proposal and how we feel about, at what point, at what stage are we really looking for sustainable yield, safe yield.
It's just time based.
Yeah.
What condition could potentially make that happen otherwise? And that's why that's written in there, right? Because
I don't think anything's going to happen.
You can't just let it go down forever. Even if, before the state, what if it gets so low, we're all in trouble.
All right. Yeah. So for purposes of this discussion, I think what I'm hearing is that well, the big question is whether or not the current language allows for what you're suggesting. That is, there, can we have this discussion around ramping? Can we have a potential trigger being defined as a trend towards NT over multiple years, at things like that? So currently, it seems like the language allows for that flexibility, and Steve suggested adding and implement it after consideration to give a little bit more commitment and teeth to this. Is that accurate? So I think the language edit for you, Joe, is considering how to incorporate that teeth factor of and implement after considering.
Right.
Mandatory phase two measures.
That's saying doing something that's more restrictive, like a mandatory measure. If we get to a certain position, the board's going to have to go, hey, look, this, we're in a bad spot. We need to talk about this, and we may need to implement something different.
I'm not following, but that's okay.
So it is kind of contrary to our timeline with respect to phase two. this would be, we need to step in maybe ahead of the game on, maybe we haven't finished all the phase one. Maybe we aren't ready for all the phase two measures, but here's for example, maybe a condition where, okay, this is clearly headed in the wrong direction. And as Ian said, a trend toward MT that doesn't appear to be changing anytime soon. And then maybe we need to do something ahead of time. Like, it just saves a spot for that. But it doesn't necessarily mean we're going to just jump in all in on phase two and restrictions and fees and all that with it. I think it just gives us a little spot where, okay, it looks like the crap's going to hit the fan. We need to do something sooner rather than later. Is that
kind of what it is? To me, that is really blurring the lines, because there are things that are warnings that would encourage voluntary measures, and then there are things that are not warnings. They drive mandatory measures, and they should be clearly delineated.
All good, by the way. Right, I agree with you. If we wanted to say, hey, right now, that's what trigger mechanisms it is when you say, right, here is what happens if this happens.
Now,
we can totally work on that and do that, too.
That's what we're doing. I mean, the paragraph there, and maybe I'm not following because it's a timing thing. It's like, while this program is under construction, then there are things that might happen that would cause us to want to do mandatory things, but because it's under construction, we can't do mandatory things? Is that what you're saying right now?
So ultimately, how this system is written is a time-based only setup to get to mandatory majors, meaning on this date, we will have something together that says, here's what happens with mandatory majors.
Yeah.
It doesn't take into consideration a condition under which something gets so bad that we are going to get in trouble in other ways. Right? Where, okay. I mean, you could foresee how this something could happen, right? You could have some really terrible situation under which there is essentially an emergency, right? Where you're saying, hey, we need to look at something, do something right now.
Like,
and we can't wait until 2032, because if we do, the problems are too significant.
Because these mandatory measures were contemplating not being in place prior to 2032.
That's how this document is written.
Oh, yes.
And that the basis of that was because of the permitting time for to get online, like, water rights recharge projects, et cetera, right?
Now I'm with you. It's a matter of years, not months, that's causing heartache here around if something drastic happens, like it doesn't rain between now and 2031. What are we going to do?
The challenge that leeway, that's up to the board to decide what they think is drastic.
Gotcha.
That would be my concern.
Yeah, that's
the crying that, hey, we got to stop. Yeah. I mean, everything stopped. That would be the reason why we'd be against changing the language.
Gotcha.
So any phase two measures that are before they're fully thought through, for lack of a better word, would have to go to the board, correct? It would be a public process.
Yeah, I mean, that's true, I think, regardless.
So any restrictions would need to go and be approved by the board in a public process, correct?
I think that's true regardless. Yeah, no matter when the time is, before or after. But if you write in here that says you cannot put in a phase two measure until a date, then you cannot put in a phase two measure until a date. And so ultimately what he's saying is to respond to these ideas of, hey, what if this one terrible thing happens? How do we address that?
Mm-hmm.
And that's just sort of putting some leeway in the system to do that. And by the way, I'm not arguing that that's the best way. It is a way. Right, you could put that in there.
It falls back to that commensurate with issues standard.
Yep.
That we're talking about through this entire document, that this is a flexible plan that allows for changes as needed.
Yeah.
Here's our plan, but we're building it, we're baking it in with some degree of flexibility that allows for both directions. You know, not just more restrictions, but fewer.
In Halsphere, where it's like, hey, this becomes a political thing as to what the bad scenario means, arguing about politically what's bad as opposed to functionally what's bad.
Mm.
And so
there's no doubt when you talk about a crisis.
Yeah.
Oh, good. That's not what
we know.
That's not
yeah.
going to be the problem.
Yeah, it's yeah, yeah. It's going to be a political crisis. A real crisis. Yes. Agreed. No, I understand your fear wholeheartedly. And so ultimately, maybe Joe can take that into consideration when he thinks about what we're talking about. If there's a way to make it so it's not a political issue, but also sort of, you know, adds a little bit to that so that it allays people's fears that, hey, if something really bad happens, we're just going to sit here and watch it.
Well, be data-based as well, right?
Yeah.
Like, it's, yeah. Okay, we have these numbers and we are heading in this direction. Time to talk to people about
we're
actually
gonna have to figure out what to do.
I think, I mean, to me, it makes good sense to be able to react sooner should the need arise. My preference would be some guardrails around moving goalposts, right? So if the definition of problem were to suddenly be altered to trigger immediate action, that to me would be problematic.
Yeah, and the goalpost thing's great. You know, you could use some descriptions that are already in the GSP or something, you know, significant undesirable results in a certain period of time. You know, there's ways to do that, I think.
I think it may be in the first sentence that the program may use trigger criteria. So that's what we're talking about, something else that are informed by, but not necessarily identical to existing GSP MOs, MTs. And we can expand on that. So it's not just the MOs and MTs, but in my mind, that's kind of the trend. You know, you don't have to hit the MT, but it's, you know, your trigger criteria is going to be informed by what that MT is. And when you can see it going down on a straight line, for example, and you're thinking, we're going to hit that because we know what we're doing. So it's informed by the MT, but the trigger criteria is not the MT. You don't have to wait to hit it. That's the concept there.
So what I'm hearing from this last piece of the conversation is that maybe Joe, just take a, I mean, it sounds like it still has the flexibility that folks want. Maybe take another eye with the lens of, like, we don't want this to be subject to some sort of variance political battle. This group wants to be able to be responsive to bad conditions when things really start hitting the fan. That said, we also want to be cognizant of, we don't want constantly goalposts moving all over the place, and so the GSP can be one of those things and help kind of set those guardrails up. But I think that's just a double check that is captured in there. Brendan, I'll go back to you on 5.4.
Just real quick, I think 5.4 drives everything, and it's just a paragraph here, but it's a major issue to determine these management areas and boundaries. We talked a little bit about polygons and that was driving everything before, and it created a lot of problems for some of us in the group, that driving letting polygons drive the as a boundary method. And so being addressed, I just wanted to
Are you saying you're in support of how 5.4 is written?
Am I in support of how it's written? It seems like it's written as a placeholder at the moment, is it not?
It is.
The program need not establish final management area for all future phase two actions. So that's saying it doesn't have to be written right now. It has to commit to the methodology, criteria, and process we're delineating in the future.
Because that's where we're at. That's all the info we have.
I think that's the appropriate.
I was wondering if that's where you're
going. No, yes. Yes.
Otherwise, we're really going back to following us, because we don't have the data in place otherwise to make another. We don't have the hydrological conditions stating you can define it from here to here, because we're not there. We don't have that data.
Yeah.
So I'm not hearing a natural language edit, but just a definite reiteration emphasis that this is something that this group and we need to really roll up our sleeves and figure this out, because it's so foundational to all these other pieces.
Foundational is the right word.
I think I'll change rates broad. I wouldn't change it.
Just one general comment. So throughout the document, you know, you're referring or reference is made to management area, special zone, area of concern. You know, we're all talking about the same thing, are we not? In other words, can't we just use one term that's a management area and that seems to be, you know, why use three or four different terms for what I believe is the same thing?
Consistency in the nomenclature.
Yeah.
So I mean, management area means something legally.
Okay, so don't use management.
Well, I'm not saying don't use it, but I'm wondering if that's why different terminology. See what he says.
Yeah, and it's a fair point. It's a fair point. And I'm thinking out loud, what I could do is use a definition, right? That, you know, again, it's going to be a little contextual depending on, you know, where we refer to it. Because, you know, you're right. Management area, that has a meaning within Sigma. It specifically allows GSAs to establish management areas. I think it should be one and the same, but don't quote me on that yet. Point taken. I'll make a note of this, or the machine will make a note of this, and I'll go through and look at all of this. So, because you're right, you know, from a lawyer's standpoint, you know, I'm very nitpicky about this in drafting documents, because if you use different words, right, a court comes along and just assumes that you had a distinction. There was a reason you used those words differently.
Yep.
And if you didn't, they'll come up with a reason that you did not intend. So I'm very sensitive to that. So thanks for that feedback.
Sure.
All right. I'm going to move us to the 5.5 yield. Looking back to Kamaka's question.
Yes. Okay. So we could spend the next 4 hours talking about the difference between sustainable yield and safe yield. You know, I think those who drafted Sigma, I'm going to give you maybe just for 1 minute, bear with me. Those who drafted Sigma, I've heard time and again, those who were in the room, you know, they swear up and down that they assumed that those two words would have the same meaning. That safe yield is something that you've heard forever and a day in groundwater adjudications. That's the term of art. That's how groundwater adjudications and those judges operate. They think of it in terms of safe yield. And there is a accepted legal definition in the case law as to what is safe yield. And that becomes the North Star in a groundwater adjudication. Along comes Sigma, and it uses sustainable yield, and you've got the undesirable results that go into determining what the sustainable yield is. As I said, you know, you talk to folks who were in the room in the drafting of Sigma, and they would, you know, some of them swear up and down that though that meant the one and the same thing, one and the same thing. As of today, not literally today, but you know, the current view based on the adjudications that are ongoing post Sigma, like Kuyama, courts are taking the position that no, they can be different. The number may be the same, but those have different meanings. One was a Sigma definition, and one is an accepted legal definition in groundwater adjudication cases. And so, because this is a Sigma document, I struck where I think I tried to get all of them, but I changed safe to sustainable because this is in a Sigma context. And so I wanted to keep tethered to the Sigma terminology like sustainable yield. So yeah, I'm very intentionally saying sustainable yield here. And courts have said, you know, the last couple years that there's two different definitions. And just because, like out in Kuyama, we have a sustainable yield, the court may use a different number for the safe yield because it's developing a physical solution. Again, that's a different legal proceeding as opposed to a GSP and Sigma. So that's, you know, very abbreviated explanation of the distinction between safe yield and sustainable yield and why I went with sustainable yield here.
I think that some of the safe yields may have slipped through, and I wish I had marked it, but you may want to look at that again.
Okay.
In other words,
search for it.
Yeah.
Words are short. Joe, and this is a question I've had for a while, and I don't know if it's appropriate here, and Stephanie, can you route this if you need to. When it comes to allocations, and we say we get into that, we're in allocation mode, what, you know, the appropriate groundwater users, how are they potentially impacted? And by appropriate, I'm thinking of the city of Corning, city of Revelo, and what does that water right do for them? Maybe that's too big of a question, but is that a consideration for us at this point?
I don't think, really good question. I don't think it is a consideration. I think it should be in the back of your mind, understanding, you know, how groundwater rights work, so you don't unnecessarily stub your toe, you know, or proceed with some misunderstanding. You know, again, bear with me, I'm not going to go down this rabbit hole. I will tell you that groundwater rights are overlying, appropriative, prescriptive. Overlying rights have the highest priority in an overdrafted basin. So you get to pump the water out and you get to use it on your overlying parcel. That's priority one. Priority two is appropriative, where you pump the water out and you move it somewhere else and you use it on other land. That has a second or junior priority. By definition, public water suppliers are all appropriators because they pump water out of the ground and they don't use it on that ground. They necessarily move it to your house, your wherever. They are appropriators. They're moving it to other and it's being used on land, not overlying the point of extraction. So when you talk about what I call the public water agencies, when you get into a groundwater adjudications, the lines get drawn pretty quickly with the public water suppliers over here because they're all appropriators and really, as I said, subject to a junior priority, and the landowners over here who are, there's some appropriators in there, but for the most part, they're overlying users of groundwater. And so they've got the senior priority. Therein can lie the battle. In an overdrafted basin, you get into the issue of prescription, where the appropriators say, I've been appropriating in an overdrafted basin for more than 5 years. I have a prescriptive right now that's on par with the overlying right. And so that's where it's a hot button issue when you talk about the public water suppliers and being appropriators. Now, in a SGMA context, you know, what has happened for the most part, I don't know that anybody's gotten too cute. In the GSAs that I've represented, where we've come up with allocations, we've done what we call a peanut butter spread approach, where everybody gets the same allocation. We haven't gotten into, well, you're an overlier, you're an appropriator. They haven't gotten into that because that's where you start adjudicating groundwater rights and priorities. And GSAs don't have the authority to do that. Only the court can do that. So again, in a SGMA context, GSAs that I've worked with just take a peanut butter spread approach where we don't really care. Everybody gets 2 acre feet, 2.3, 1.7, 0.9, whatever it is. Everybody gets the same allocation and that's it. We haven't gone down that rabbit hole that I just took you down, because ultimately, and that's why out in one reason why you see some of these adjudications get filed in these post-SGMA basins, because the landowners or the public water suppliers have said, we don't like the allocation formula, that methodology that the GSA came up with. We're going to have the court adjudicate what everybody's groundwater rights are and those priorities at the same time, because that's what the court can do. The GSA can't do that. So you opened up, I think maybe perhaps unwittingly, a little bit of the Pandora's box there, but that's what that looks like. It's a real issue. So it's something to keep in mind. I don't think we need to tackle it today.
Thank you.
All right. Let's move, because again, I'm cognizant we only have Joe to the top of the hour, and we're about that way to go about me. All right.
This one was fairly straightforward. You see the comment about the Ludorf and Scalamini memo, and, you know, again, using that, you know, it may serve, you know, it's not a blanket adoption of that. And you'll see, again, we talked about it before, but this is an example of the difference between will versus may. And so just making clear that it could be considered, but it's not the gospel. Let's see. Thresholds. This is more, I think, of the special zone methodology and whatnot.
I think on the next one, funding and financing. You know, I'm of the opinion that we should pull this whole section, and mainly because I think the ship has
has just sailed, so to speak, and the county's moving on funding and fees at this point. And I don't know, this is kind of late to the game, maybe. I don't know how else to say it.
Yeah, we
talked about that in the last meeting. I was under the impression we kind of agreed for our board to do that already. Okay. But with that one caveat that if we come up with a program here that needs its own funding, whatever that is, right, that's in this room, then we should probably talk about how that funding works for that program.
For phase two.
Yeah. So if we're talking about phase two stuff, and we say, hey, this is going to take money, then maybe we can have a conversation about how we get there. So if you want to keep something like that language in there, cool. What's that?
So leave 7.4 and click everything else out.
What was 7.4? I'm sorry. I just want to make sure.
Additional fees for command management actions.
Yeah, because to Michael's point, 7.1 through 7.3.
Phase two project,
It's out of our purview.
It's out of our purview. I think, Justin, your point is if we want to have an opinion on how the phase two fees are structured,
either way, no.
And that's all it is, an opinion.
Yeah,
a recommendation, perhaps.
Yeah.
So we can weigh in on it, but not get deep in the weeds in it.
And Joe, do we need to include it for the purposes of completeness as far as DWR is concerned, or can we just omit 7.1 through 7.3?
Yeah, you can. You can. And I did one draft internally. I had struck out, really, it's interesting because I did strike out 7.1 through 7.3. And then I'm like, I'll just leave it here and make a margin comment that, up for discussion. So point taken, it's easy enough to delete that out. And what I'm hearing is leave in 7.4, make 7.4 become 7.1, I suppose.
Yeah, I think some of 7.1, a preamble as to the authority of the body drafting this document would be helpful.
Got it.
Yeah, it's a recommendation, but we are not the fee making body.
Yep. Okay.
I suppose I can definitely not work there. Okay.
And then as soon as practicable, I think that I heard a comment at the very beginning about, that language. I can't remember if that was a good thing or a bad thing. But again, I'm trying to come up with, something that was promoting flexibility. And again, as I'm doing this, I'm not, I hope no one takes that as the implication that, this is supportive of kicking the can down the road either, right? Because I certainly know people want to move this thing forward.
Sorry, Joe, just one annotation here. So the resolution itself does direct no later than January 1, 2026. However, we're getting a little reprieve from the board in order to get this thing together and make it happen. So we may want to think about how that language looks. Because right now you're saying that the resolution directs it as soon as practical, but that's not as factual. Because it does direct it no later than January 1, 2020.
Yeah, thank you.
Remove the strikeout portion and then comma or as soon as practical. And that gives us flexibility.
Well, I don't think you put that word. I can just say that we can just say, we're working to do this as soon as practical, right?
Right. The resolution says what it says. So it's like, that's period. And then this is what we're planning on doing.
That's right. That's it. Yep.
Okay. Thank you.
The appendix speaks in more detail to the fee structure in phase two. So I'm going to relate that part of the conversation to get at the appendix.
Are we going through the appendix today?
I have a question for you, Joe, about the appendix. Like, what do you see? How could the appendix A be used? Because it goes into, additional details and ideas and things like that. That I know some folks have different opinions about. So, what are your thoughts on how appendix A could be used?
Yeah, good question. Because as I was working on this, I got through the framework, right? And I was really proud of myself. I got through that, and then I got to Appendix A, and I'm like, oh, okay, I got more to go. That's right. And so I was going through of it, and it was getting a little repetitive. It was getting, and again, sometimes you draft these things initially, and then it evolves over time. And I was just, I remember wondering kind of to myself if some of this couldn't be pushed up into the framework. You know, this is more meat on the bone. But again, these things evolve and then you get a little bit more clarity. And I'm just wondering if Appendix A couldn't be pushed up to avoid the repetition, and you put some of this, the examples and whatnot, up in the framework, you know, that it could include these things. So it's a little bit of a chore, but I think if everyone is of the same mind, I'm not trying to push in any direction, I think it may be worthwhile, because as I was working on it, there was a fair amount of repetition. Like, well, we've already saying this up here. It's just a little bit more detail down here.
My question earlier on was whether the initial document could stand alone without Appendix A, and I guess I would ask that again. There are additional details in there that I think we kind of indicated that we needed to discuss further, particularly with respect to credits, transfers. I think fees are out of our purview, but just allocation and transfer of pumping credits and such need to have some really significant guardrails. And do they need to be included in the context of the first document?
Right. Probably not the level of detail that's here. You know, I would be supportive of combining the Appendix A into the primary document. Because I think I think 3/4 of the Appendix A could go away. There's probably only about 1.4 of Appendix A that needs to move to the other document. To your point, there's no point having excessive detail when we've previously stated we're going to work it out down the track.
So process-wise, what I can see happening is that we heard the feedback on the framework. We can have this exercise where we look through Appendix A and try to reduce the redundancy, see what can be pulled into the main framework document using terms that may include, shall include, those types of flexibility pieces to it. And then and a lot of this content could actually be a source for how we, this group, has conversations when we still really delve into some of the details, like when some of the ideas around like water trading and things like that. So some of the stuff, these ideas, they don't go away if they don't make it into the framework document. They can still be part of this group's.
Yep, I think that's exactly right. I think brevity is best for this initial document, and if we can...
You're not going to get to the bottom of all questions that need to be answered on that. We don't have enough information yet to your point. So I would make the plea that it's included as a may on the list to leave it open for discussion, because there's no way you're going to get all that resolved.
Exactly.
You're talking about credits and water.
Credits, trading, all those that are kind of lumped together. We're being
that's a
big topic, and it's going to take a lot of work.
Yes.
So I'd like to make sure that it's left open as far as open for discussion.
Mm-hmm. And to his point, it's going to be really hard to have that discussion in a real way until we kind of figure out how we're going to break up into zones and things
right.
of this nature.
You know,
it's really hard to do those things independently, right?
Right. Exactly right.
And it needs to be done in a linear fashion, but I think the first task is getting this financial document done.
So, let's quickly, okay. Joe, are you aware of where any credit system has been implemented and is successful? Or water trading system? So it's been done anywhere?
Define the credit system.
Well, water trading / credit.
Because there's lots of tentacles on that. That's all.
I think what's really, we need to distinguish between in-lieu credit, recharge credit, versus, and those two, I think, I don't think we're going to get a lot of argument among the group that those are worthy goals and need to be included in. But I think we're at least personally, where I have issue is when we start talking about allocating pumping rights from one area, even if it's within the same sub-basin, and moving them over to another piece of ground on paper to allow that continued pumping in an unsustainable manner on the phone.
And you nail it, and we do see it, you know, particularly in a groundwater adjudication. Usually what gets everybody to the table back in the day was the ability to move water around and the market, because at law, you can't move your overlying right around. It just doesn't work that way. The law doesn't support that. But to settle these groundwater adjudications, that's the carrot, that you can put that in a physical solution, that you can move water credits around, you can create a credit system, and that gets people to the table. And so, yes, they do work. They're out there. They do work. The huge asterisk hits the point that you just raised, which is, this is not a swimming pool, right? It doesn't work that way. You can't just say, I'm going to move the straw from here over to here, and it's going to work the same way, pulling, you know, 10 acre feet out of the ground. So the asterisk is always, it's subject to water master review and approval. There's a lot that goes into what I just said, but what that means is, yeah, you can make a request to change the point of extraction from Black Acre to Red Acre, but that has to be reviewed and approved by the Water Master or with a GSA. The GSA has to approve that, because you're right. Everybody will, you know, collect on one area that's already heavily overdrafted, and they're going to move these credits, which is just paper water, to this one area. You can't do that. It makes no sense, and everyone recognizes that. So the process is, even with a market, it still has to be subject to review for adverse impacts by the GSA or the Water Master in a groundwater adjudication. So that is part and parcel of every marketing, every credit system that I have seen. It has to have that approval, because otherwise you could do real damage if you didn't look for adverse impacts caused by the transfer.
So on a practical level, has that just resulted in litigation and continued overdraft, or how does that,
You know, with one exception, it's been fine. You know, the Eastern Thule GSA, which is just about out of business, I think they were a bad example. They had a credit system, and they did allow for it to be traded around. And I don't think, without going down that rabbit hole, I don't think it was implemented properly. You know, that's my editorial comment. I don't think it was implemented properly, and I don't think that they properly looked out for the adverse impacts. And so I think it's a bad example of a market, because, like I said, I think they did allow some precipitation credits and things that just really didn't make sense. They allowed those to be moved around and kind of allowed for more harm to be done. That being said, I haven't, and there was litigation because of that. They were already under the microscope, and there was litigation because of that that just got resolved. Otherwise, you know, I've not seen that in a groundwater adjudication. Ultimately, somebody can go back to the court and say, I don't like what the Water Master just did, but I haven't seen, you know, mass litigation come out of these things. Because again, theoretically, you've got your GSA that's looking at these things, and they've got a reasonable basis for either approving or disapproving a transfer.
Time check. Quick additions, and then I want to make sure, because I want to make sure we're giving you space to folks who haven't had really much part of the conversation. So
I just want to digress. And Joe, is it an action item to combine the appendix with the framework document? Are we all agree that that's the next item? I didn't want to gloss over that until we had that.
Omitting the redundancy.
Yep.
And then allowing the place mark for this whole concept of credits and trading. I think we need to clean that up and put some significant guardrails on it that say, okay, we're not saying we will do this, but we may do this.
And there's a lot of work.
I think that gives us room.
Yep.
And I think then to that point, that's what I was taking incidentally. Like, yeah, this is the to-do here, is to merge these two, with most of it being redundancy or too much detail for the framework. And I'm looking right now, as you'll see on the screen, the pumping allocation of potential credit system. I'm going to throw this out there. Frankly, I'd park this, right? And really, the framework document says it may be considered as a tool, but it's a may. This detail, it gets parked. And when you all or whoever gets to what does the system look like, you dust this off and say, hey, this is something, you know, ideas that we were kicking around before, and this becomes some talking points, but it's not part of the framework.
Yep. Spot on. Thank you.
Perfect. Ian, really fast, and then I'm going to do the checking.
Say it again.
Really fast. Do you have something on
that? Yeah, I'm under Sigma, not under adjudication. Can you tell me or send the group a couple credit trading systems that have worked, that have actually been implemented and have not yielded undesirable results.
Sure. Yeah. And that I think initially, yes, is the short answer. And just so you know, what will be coming your way, you know, under the adjudications, because they're older, you know, they're older. And so, you know, there's more history there. When they're under Sigma, you know, I can't tell you, you know, that I think it may be too soon to tell about the undesirable results and what, because again, some of them are just a few years old. I mean, they're relatively new, as opposed to some of these older systems that have been around, you know, for a decade or more.
I wouldn't say the older ones are irrelevant, but we're fashioning this in a Sigma world, so it has to be pertinent. And,
For sure. Yeah, no, absolutely. I'm just saying that when you get it, if you say, well, gee, Joe, most of the success stories are all, you know, in adjudicated basins. Yeah, because they've been around. You got the history. You can see that the system works, as opposed to the GSAs who have only been doing it for a few years.
Checking in with the folks that have not had a chance to give their perspective, and so I'm making eye contact without trying to call folks out. But so, anything top two or three key things, key feedback that you want to make sure that Joe hears as he's going to make these revisions to the framework document.
Well, I've been pretty quiet on this, but I think the framework document itself is okay and going in the right direction. I'm still struggling just a little bit on where it says things like waiting for enough data, basically. I want to know at what point we decide we have enough data to make a decision, you know, and not just keep pushing it off. And that's not necessarily a framework discussion item, but it is, as far as this process moving forward, we need to get to the point where we're defining some of these things and using what we have, not just, we'll look at it. Well, when we have enough data, we don't have enough data. When do we have enough data? You know, we put 100 RMS wells in the subbasin. Oh, well, now we don't have the data because they're not 10 years of data. At some point, we have to make some decisions.
So, Harry, definitely want the separate from this, want that clear roadmap and stop the timing, the sequencing identified, so that way.
Yeah, but let's
start in that really.
Let's get to the point where we are defining those areas of concern.
Well, if I could build on that, and Joe, this is a question. Would it behoove this group to have a timeline included in the framework document? So I think a lot of the concern, and I share that concern with this group, and I think a lot of the concern at the county supervisor level is exactly Todd's point. You know, when is this work going to be done? Does it make sense for us to say, okay, here's our framework document, and here's our timeline that, you know, within 2027, we're going to have phase one fees on the boat.
We're going to tackle this this year. Because we have to have those ladder rooms anyway. Because like we were just talking to, we're not going to be able to do credits, talk about credits until we talk about zones and have that thing all lined up. We know what we're talking about.
I mean,
it's a work plan.
Prioritize. Well, it's like it's dominoes, you know, like which is that first one that's going to knock the second one down, that's going to knock the third one
down. Exactly right.
We can't put the cart before the horse. So,
well, some of that's in point 9 of appendix implementation.
I think it builds on 9.
Yeah,
I mean,
it's already part of theirs.
Yeah. I agree.
So that should be incorporated into the primary document. Okay.
Right. And I did not futz around with this. I thought about it, but it good, really good question, because I was thinking, as I was working on this, I was thinking, to address concerns about the can just not even getting kicked, but just kind of rolling gently down the road, you know, that timeline, you know, the work plan, the order of events, sequencing, all of that, I think is going to be needed. And I think it's going to address a lot of concerns.
I'm just trying to put Justin in the best shape we can. So when this is presented to the board, it includes a timeline and work plan. And we're also not fighting about it in here. Hey, we agree. This is what we're going to do. Let's do it right now.
Yeah. But that's going to take feedback from, I mean, the people that are going to provide the data is LSCE.
Yeah.
It's going to have to take input from them. Yeah.
And in fact, Joe, you have carte blanche to have a discussion with LSCE about that if we're talking about how that functions, because you are in contract with them.
Right.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
To where they can have that internal discussion to be like, hey, this works the best.
Yeah, because we talk theoretical on what we want, but they got to provide
the actual hard data.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We're kicking the can because until they have the data, I don't know when that is, they got to tell us.
And yeah. Eddie can really give you a good sense with that. That'll be super helpful, I think.
Yeah, it could be something that's generalized. In 2027, management areas will be determined. In 2028, sustainable yield will be determined. In 2029, fee structure will be discussed. In 2030, potential water markets will be debated, right? Something like that.
I like what everyone was saying. It may be nice if, though, that if Eddie's involved, we can get a budget idea for this effort. So
yeah.
We could, maybe make our fee schedule supported.
Yeah.
Or know that we're going for a Prop 4 grant. And we're going to use it this way.
So in the current fee schedule that we have, yeah. By the way, there is money built into this. And we have had some conversations with Eddie about it. And I think as long as we pass a series of fees, we should have the money to support what we need to support for this effort. Mm-hmm. Right? And that I think that is going to be good. So there's two different parts to this, right? One of these things are required by SICM anyway. We need to be building on some of this data, and we need to be creating these things for our 5-year updates, and we need to broaden our data horizon, and that's built into that administrator fee. That's there. But these things that are specific data packages associated with demand management, there is money within that smaller PMA fee in order to accomplish that. So we there have been discussions about this already for that exact reason, because it has to happen, right? Yeah.
One more thing on that same note, though, we need to kind of figure out what we're defining so we know what data we need to get. Because just saying we need data doesn't get us where we're going, because we've got to spend some time with Eddie, of course, as far as what's out there and what's available and what direction we're going, so we know what we're looking for and trying to get.
One of the biggest sticking points we've had is this whole piece of polygon methodology. And so I've talked to Eddie a few times now about, and we've discussed it here briefly, about watershed management zones that are at least some approximation of hydrological conditions underground. They have the ability to overlay all that, but with soil types, planting areas, potential planting areas, what's already in. And I just, in my mind, makes so much more sense than in a circle around a well. It does.
It could perfectly work well, but also, of course, anything that is required in delineation, Joe has already said this out loud, puts a neighbor against a neighbor, right? So you have a line. And we just need to make sure that if we're going to say watersheds, we have data that supports that watersheds are reasonable delineation. Otherwise, that is arbitrary.
But I would argue that it's less arbitrary than a piece in polygon.
I would argue the opposite, but that's okay. I don't have to be right. I'm just telling you. I would disagree with that statement personally. Okay.
But getting back to Todd's point, I think the determination of other management areas is the first task ahead of us, right? So the data we need, to your point, the data we need is whatever data is going to support the delineation.
And the first question that goes to LSCE is what information is out there that we can readily get available that can inform this hydrogeologic conversation and get some sense of, what would it take to get that information be able to not have to wait for perfect data. Make sure that we're getting along, because it is foundational to everything else.
And he's finishing up some second round modeling right now for the 5-year update. So some of that early modeling is happening already, which should help, right? Because that's another big data set that we
didn't have before.
Yeah.
Get back to our homework assignment. This group's first homework assignment is to present this framework doc to the flood control, correct?
Commission. We need to get something that passes commission and flood control in front of them.
So is it reasonable to think that once Joe has combined the appendix with his framework document, we review that document one more time, maybe? And I think we're very close to having a framework doc that's ready to submit.
Very agree.
And I would argue that let's just get that done and get that off our desk before we
end up with all that other pieces.
With the timeline.
You get my bill on that.
All
right, Bill. Bill's
position. Going back to the management zones, it was brought up that we're going to have some data to get away from polygons. Is private pumper well data any good to the organization?
I think that any amount of well elevation data is good to the organization. I just state it that way. I mean, it's so dependent on where exactly it is and what it affects, but it is. The more we have, the better. There's no limit on that.
Good. Bill, any thoughts on any edits or feedback questions that you have for Joe on the framework document?
No, I don't have any more questions. I think we did a great job putting this together, and we've made more progress in the last 60 days than we've made in 15 years.
I have a question for Joe. I am wondering if there are any similar plans that actually go into land use to decrease demand, and if so, what type of restrictions could be put in place? I just feel like the elephant in this room is the fact that we have orchards proliferating at an accelerated rate, and that's what's kind of causing our problems. And I'm wondering how to address that.
Yeah, so the short answer is no. And Gia, there are a couple reasons for that. GSAs don't have land use authority, and so the counties get pretty particular about when their toes being stepped on, when GSAs have started to say, here's what you can do over here, here's what you can't do over there. So from a land use planning standpoint, no, the GSAs just regulate the, you know, how much water can get taken out of the ground. What they will do, and this goes into the phase one voluntary, you know, they will offer land fallowing programs to the extent that they can get money for it. And so they will, you know, pay farmers to fallow land, or they'll go out and they'll buy land and then fallow it to take land out of production. I've seen that a little bit. But again, it comes down to funding. And if GSAs have the, you know, grant funding or otherwise, you know, they can have a land fallowing program, and they can actually, have seen it before, go actually buy land and take it out of production. Sometimes it's for groundwater banking basins, but the idea also is to take land literally out of production. So that allows more, you know, frees up, if you will, some of the safe yield to be used elsewhere. But they'll get there in a way, but not through land use regulation.
Right. It's through the GS, but I know our planning commission is sort of discussing doing something, so it would be at that level and not something we should address. I just have people asking all the time, why aren't you demand management people talking about actually managing demand?
So maybe a question is, do you know of any examples of GSAs, local agencies, I'll put it in that term, who have worked with their GSAs, whether or not that's different people or just different hats, to address this land use planning piece.
And he pretty much said it's like on the county level.
The groups have worked together to, I don't know, like their general plan amendment or something. So if there are any examples that you can think of where there was actually a change to the land use, working with the agencies who didn't have that authority.
Okay, I'll see what examples I can find.
Sorry, Joe, didn't mean to cut you off.
No. I was just going to say, not beyond what I already said. Okay.
Comment in response to that: we need to be careful. Obviously, I'm speaking from a grower perspective, so We collectively, everyone in the room and everyone involved in the program, need to be careful about oversimplifying the problem and pointing through one issue as the driving cause of a problem, which is groundwater. Groundwater issues in general. It's oversimplification is problematic and not productive. So it is a multi-pronged, multifaceted, lots of things going on. Not going to deny that cropping patterns across the state of California are contributing or are a contributing factor to groundwater use. But it's not the only one. So if somebody says, why don't you fix that and everything will be better? That's the wrong approach.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm not talking to you, or I just want to be careful about saying and responding to that. So it's just
in general. About the messaging mostly.
It's
a complicated issue with lots of different
drivers. We all know, I'm driving around the county, and I know this is the reason for the problem. Why, if we only fix that, everything would be better. I think those are problematic statements.
I understand that. Issue at hand. I mean, look at our government. Lots of issues.
Yes.
Maybe one big giant problem.
I do want to, since we're running up close on time, has a hard stop. I just want to make sure anyone acknowledging no silver bullets. That said, are there examples out there where folks have been able to collaborate to find some sort of mutually beneficial system that leverages the various authorities available to the people involved? I want to double check the final kind of call out to this. Anyone, any other feedback that you want to convey to Joe on the framework document?
I had a question, and it was with regards to priority based on year of establishment or year of use. So as I understand it, we'll be determining management areas and allocation will be apportioned to the irrigated acres within each area. As that allocation is considered, or I suppose altered, is precedence given to users who have a pumping history as opposed to new developments? I think it's just it's an example problem that I think this group needs to think through. So
I don't think there is there is no first in time or whatever that, so there's no priorities, available. I mean, we have an overlying groundwater right. It's because my neighbor has had an orchard there for 10 years and I have it, doesn't diminish my groundwater right or what I can extract. So I wish it did. I wish it did, because that would,
simplify things.
There are some precedents still in place with respect to surface water diversion.
Yes.
So whether that could be applied I suggested or even called out, a last in, first out accounting term, for development. And I don't think it's, I would agree. I don't know, but Joe could tell us whether there's any legal basis for that or not. But I think it would be litigated till the ends of time if they tried to do something like that. But I've been in favor of curtailment for some time. I think it's a responsible thing to do. But I understand also that it's a private property issue.
Yeah.
What are you going to tell a person he can or can't do on this property? It's just contributing to a smaller pool for everyone. That's what disturbed me about continuing. In the face of declining groundwater, that we continue to plant more orchards is problematic at the very least.
Joe, do you have comments on that?
I missed the first in, first out. What was that in relation to?
Last in, first out is with respect to pumping groundwater. How could you in a world that we're in now, prioritize, say, okay, you've only been pumping for a year, and so you're going to get curtailed first. Right. That's what we're talking about here.
Yeah.
I see it as, full of
litigation, but you tell us.
Yeah, that came up in Cuyama, and it comes up in the groundwater adjudications too. You know, like in the Las Poses adjudication, we just got the Court of Appeal decision upholding the judgment a couple weeks ago, and we have took a hybrid approach down there, and it was land based, you know, equal by acreage, and then there was a supplemental allocation based on historical use. And we went through, we called it a variance process, because we had folks coming in who had only been pumping for a couple of years. Now, there was sort of this weird, the adjudication has been going on for 5 years and you just planted trees last year. Like, what did you think was happening, right? You planted a bunch of trees right in the middle of a groundwater adjudication. So there was some suspension of disbelief at times. But there was a variance process for folks who did that. Like, I just came online. And so there was a, hey, how do you handle them? And they would get some form of a supplemental allocation based on usage, which even though they didn't have the historical use. So there was some of that, and some of it, the deal was you're not going to get the same as everybody else because you haven't been pumping. And so it's all of those vagaries that lead to litigation. Well, that was in the context of litigation. It was in the settlement of litigation and folks saying, yeah, I don't have the resources to fight to the end of the world on this. And so, you know, I will take something less because I don't have that historical pumping. In other areas where they don't have the historical pump, you know, they were just coming online, like out in Cuyama, the court's struggling with, I don't want to zero somebody out because they haven't been pumping. And so what the judge there what he's proposing to do there is to set aside, I forget what the number is, but you know, 500 acre feet, whatever it is, but some pool for the small pumpers who really haven't been pumping what the full small pumper allocation will be, like 5 acre feet per acre. They haven't been pumping that, or 5 acre foot, you know, pot for themselves. They haven't been pumping it. So the judge is saying, if you haven't been pumping it, I don't want to zero you out because you do have a groundwater right. That's a property right. I don't want to zero that out. So I'm going to set aside a pool that you can draw that as those people want to pump more, they can take from that pool. And then it's going to literally be some other judge's problem when that pool runs dry. But that's another creative way of handling it. Just set aside a pot and say, all right, you people who haven't pumped yet, you can draw from that pot. There is a concept in the law, it's called subordination, and it applies in Sigma specifically. And subordination means if you haven't been pumping, you haven't been exercising your right, you can be subordinated to your neighbor who has and has been making economic investments based on his or her ability to pump. And the court can use its equitable power and subordinate you and say, sorry, you know, you're going to have a junior priority to the other people who have been pumping. And that's, you know, it's exactly what you're talking about. And so the authority there exists. And there's been some creative ways to actually implement something like that to keep the peace.
And that's under Sigma or an adjudication?
It's under Sigma now because the subordination principle comes out of the adjudication. And then Sigma specifically says that the subordination principle can be applied.
I mean, for me, from a landowner perspective, I think clarity and consistency here is key. And one of the larger risks to consistency is if I'm in a management zone and we work out an allocation, Justin tells me I've got 2.5 acre feet. Yep. I make plans based on that. And then all of a sudden, a guy knocks in 700 acres right down the road. And that pie now just got divided across, and my 2.5 turns into a 1.5. That, to me, is probably the biggest challenge in how we figure this out moving forward. So if there's a way to say, we protect that initial allocation, and if you do choose to plant past a certain date, you know, maybe you have a junior allocation, so it's not necessarily as punitive on those that predate it.
So something I heard when Joe when he was talking about this, though, that does just put that light bulb up in my head is he said that those subordinated rights were decided in courts. And so I whatever that is or however we talked in that, I just want to put it, do it in a way that isn't end up with
buying a lawsuit
courts forever. Right. That sucks.
Right. These are land use decisions, though, that are apart from the man management plan. They are not disconnected from in the demand management plan might help inform it and the folks that are making the land use decisions. And if we build a good demand management plan, we might avoid land management decisions that would be problematic. But time will tell whether there's
that one probably is groundwater management based. It's just a matter of whether you really could make it happen without having to spend a decade in court to do it. So
yeah, we start talking
about that's I would defer to
that. I'm gonna interject just because we have 5 minutes and there's a key next step question for Joe, but I think you have your marching orders for just revisions to the framework and incorporating items from Appendix A as it makes sense. There's some discussions to be for us to be connecting with LSCE to get a sense of, you know, available data or forthcoming data that can help with some of our conversations down the line. That said, this group has two meetings kind of saved on your calendar, I think April 7th and April 14th. I think it sounds like generally that we're kind of close to being able to share a framework document to the board in time for the April 23rd meeting, which does fine with the timeline because I think materials have to be in board materials by April 16th to get put into the board packet. So that's kind of our date to hit this April 23rd thing. Joe, what's your thoughts on it? When do you think you would have a revised draft for this group to look at? Is April 7th too soon? Is it, or should we, is April 14th more?
I'm gonna, this is tongue in cheek. Yeah, it's too soon. But given the timeline that you laid out, I can make that happen. And so it may be like the day before, but yeah, I think we need to have it for the 7th so we can look through it to keep on track. Cause I was going to initially say, well, maybe we don't have it for the 7th, but the next one, but that you're bumping up against the 16th deadline to get the board packet out, get it in their board packet. So long way of saying I'll make it happen for the 7th.
All right. Cool. Does that sound okay with folks that, you know, things might not be perfect by the 7th, but at least have some decent progress with the revisions that we've discussed today? It keeps, you know, held to the fire, and I think we've got a good ramp towards the April 23rd board meeting.
We're moving in a great direction.
And by the one, April 23rd one doesn't need to be the entirely finished product. We still have a couple details. That's okay. But at least we can go show something to them and say, hey, we have actually been doing this. Can you give me another month or two? And we're going to figure out these last couple details and we'll bring something. You know what I mean? So I think that would be important.
And this, now we have groundwater commission on the 8th. So are we just going to update them as where we are? I feel bad that we're going to okay something in this ad hoc and working group and not get commission.
You still will. Before we go. You're not getting a board approval on the 23rd. It's going to go to commission for recommendations in between anyway. You are not skipping the commission.
I think we need to, you know, phrase it as an update.
Here's where we're at. We
need to give them something.
Yeah, because I'm going to ask in that meeting for a little more time, because technically our deadline would have been that meeting, and I'm going to say, hey, can you give us a couple more months?
I think
or whatever we in the Russo group agree to.
There's enough people on board here in the commission that are going to recognize already that we've made a light year move here in the last 30 days.
But it probably makes sense to, when we do update the commission, I think, to ask that this committee remain in place to start. So once this framework document is turned in, quote unquote, that this group can continue to work on the next issue, which is the meter management zone, and then everything else. Because, you know, right now, I think this committee is unset when we turn that homework in. But to me, there's a lot to do. There's a lot to do after the framework document, clearly.
All right, I need to step into another meeting.
Thanks, Joe.
All right, thank you. Good to see you.
Does this group feel good? I mean, I feel like the other question that we kind of had for this group, the other agenda item we had was to delve into the work plan. I would say that, I mean, we heard it loud and clear this meeting and previous meeting, the top two items that really are that this group delve in is the management zones related to that, the sustainable safe yield calculation. Kind of related that, I would say, is actually what the triggers. Just better understanding with that and this connection to the MOs and MTs. So that's kind of like the first big chunk of really foundational discussion pieces, and that leads into other pieces that we can take on, like trading and probably curtailments, things like that. So
I got 2 points.
Yeah.
We don't talk about undesired results. We haven't yet. We haven't incorporated undesired results in this discussion. And I don't. And by default, we do when we talk about minimum thresholds. But you know, when it comes to triggers in the short term, undesired results or approaching undesired results could be the trigger. Okay, we see that pending, and therefore we could develop a trigger to address that. The other thing I've brought it up a couple of times, but I would like it to be part of the discussion where we talk about how we ramp up to a sustainable yield. Okay. So it's one thing to establish, okay, so you got 2.5 acre feet in theory in 2032. That's not going to happen overnight for growers. You know, it'll be obviously a shock for everybody. And so there's a way to ramp up for that. And I'd like that to be part of the discussion, or at least
anyone who comes to our meeting tonight, by the way, is going to see some discussion about how that could look. By the way, we have been talking about that a lot in the background with the consultants about how, you know, sort of you could do this in like little phases over time to get back up to this sustainable yield type scenario, and just kind of how that would kind of look, you know. So just so you know, that discussion is happening behind the scenes too, right, from the consultant's point of view.
So I don't think, I'm not asking for a lot of detail in this doc, but I think that's a good reference to him.
Where are the fees at? You mentioned the fees earlier.
Yeah. So the fee study parameters are all there. He's putting together the final details on the actual study. You will see when you come to the meeting tonight some numbers that are going to look like real dang close to the real numbers. We're kind of there now. We've got all the data in the databases, and now it's just a matter of the final write-ups between lawyers, consultants, and all the bits to make the whole fee program put together into one document.
What is the meeting tonight and tomorrow, too?
Tonight, tomorrow, yep. So tonight, 6 o'clock at the community center, and tomorrow, 6 o'clock, Corning City Hall.
So what's the expected outcome of these meetings? Are these considered listening sessions only, or are there going to be public feedback, or what's the format? Other than what I've read, you're going to be there presenting, and also somebody from Ludorf?
Yeah, Ludorf and I are going to be the presenters. We go back and forth through topics just based on what it is. And ultimately, what the goal is to get feedback, right? So we're talking about things. We're talking about what those few choices are that are still sort of left in the game. Like, hey, you know, what's the bits we want to pass this on when they're going to make these final decisions? And also just to give people an update of where we are too, you know, with all of those things together. So ultimately, you know, oftentimes you'll see in these meetings where we tell people, hey, listen, this is all the stuff we've heard from you guys. And so this is why we're doing this, right? So it's some of that too often.
And so the two meetings are identical.
The two meetings are identical. If you go to one, you would hear the same thing the next time.
Yeah. What time's the Corning one start?
6 p.m. Yeah.
Are you talking about COP4 as something for the county?
Not right now. One of the things I will tell you that I know of COP4 from talking to the DWR folks is those people that got big Prop 68s are likely not to get COP4 funds. Just as an anecdotal scenario. Like they're saving that for some of those people that have some stuff together that get funded that didn't get a lot of funding and assistance before. But also, we don't know yet when COP4 is coming out. So that date has not been given to us.
There's a workshop on April 30th.
There is. Yeah.
So we have a general game plan. There's a little bit of some recon that we're going to do with LSCE, but certainly the goal is to start really helping map out what is the roadmap for some of these top issues for demand management. Right. I just wanted to trying to wrap this up. I know we set aside 3 hours. And I didn't know. So anything else we feel like we can adjourn for today? All right. Thank you all. Thanks for the folks who called in, and hopefully we'll see you either tonight or tomorrow for the public meetings.
Oh, yeah.